How's it going, everybody? Brian Alvarez here on Figure Four Daily. It is December 22nd, 2011, here at figure4online.com/wrestlingobserver.com. We are joined today by Eddie Edwards, one half of the main event of tomorrow's ROH Final Battle iPay-Per-View taking place at GoFightLive.tv. He will be facing Davey Richards for the ROH Championship. It's available, as noted, GoFightLive.tv, and we've been talking about it all week here on this program. And Eddie, how you doing today?
I'm not too bad. Thanks for having me.
No problem. The first question here, obviously, if people have been watching the TV and following the storyline, you have got Dan the Beast Severn in your corner, UFC Hall of Famer. And tell everybody a little bit about the Beast and how you got hooked up with him.
Yeah, man, the Beast, he lives up to that name. Even today, you know, just seeing what he can do as far as training and technique, it's mind-blowing. Originally got hooked up because me and Davey and the rest of Team Richards, we were going to go out there and do some training, and something came up for Davey where he had to go away to Japan, but I still went through with it, and that's how I got him in my corner, and I'm thankful that I did.
Now, you, of course, are you were the first ever television champion of Ring of Honor. And it's interesting because watching Ring of Honor for a long time, I remember when you first won, I think it actually might have been the world title. And it caught a lot of people off guard, the idea that, oh my God, Eddie Edwards won the title. It just came out of nowhere, it seemed. And I thought that as a champion, by the time that reign ended, I thought, man, Eddie did a hell of a job as champion here. And what was kind of the reaction that you got from people when you first won the title? And did you kind of feel that as the title reign went on, you sort of developed a new level of respect from everybody?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people had that same thing where pretty shocked when it happened. I mean, judging by the response at the Manhattan Center when it happened, I'd say everybody in there was pretty shocked and caught off guard. As far as my title reign, I was really happy with the way it started going and the groove I kind of got into. And I think, you know, well, my goal was to open up some people's eyes who maybe thought that I wasn't, you know, maybe I wasn't capable of being a world champion at the time, but I think towards the end that I may have opened a few eyes, and that was my goal.
Now, let's go back. I want to talk about the very beginning of your, actually, even before your career began, little Eddie Edwards. What do you remember as your first ever wrestling match that you watched?
I remember it was the Road Warriors. I do not recall against who, but I just remember sitting at my uncle's and watching that match with my brothers and then trying to do the moves afterward.
You try to do a doomsday device on your brother?
No, I think I was trying. Luckily, not the doomsday. We didn't have enough people at the time, so.
I see. So you watched the Road Warriors, and was it kind of like a, you know, some people when they saw their first wrestling match, it was just kind of like, oh, that's pretty cool. When's wrestling going to be on again? And some people watch that first match, and it's like, well, my God, I was born to be a wrestler here. This is what I'm going to do for a living. What was your reaction when you saw that first Road Warriors match?
For me, it was, you know, I was, of course, interested at the time, being a young kid, and I would watch it, you know, on the weekends or when I could, but it didn't hook me right away in the way that it did later on. I fell out of it for a few years as I got older and just, you know, stuck with sports and whatever. But then my younger brother actually got back into it pretty hardcore, and he turned me back onto it, and that just hooked me. And from that point on, that's when I was like, wow, I need to figure out more about this. I need to learn more. I need to figure out how I can get involved in this.
How did you get involved in this?
I started training at Killer Kowalski School in Malden, Massachusetts.
Just, was it one of those deals? I guess this would have been early part of the 21st century. Was it like 2001, somewhere around there?
Yep, 2001.
2001. So were you one of the guys that found wrestling school information on the internet? Or I guess it was probably a little bit after the generation that had to look in wrestling magazines for this info.
Yeah, I mean, I searched online. I was just trying to find, you know, the nearest place or who. I thought that I had to be 18 at the time, so that was kind of holding me back. But then I found, you know, the info on Kowalski's, and I went by there. I was 17 at the time, and I asked him if I had to wait, and he said, no, you can join right now, and that blew my mind. That got me very excited at that point.
Now, what kind of sports did you do growing up?
Yeah, I played, you know, baseball and basketball. Those are my two main ones, but I was always a fan of every sport and always played, you know, whether it was in the sandlot or playground, you know, just played whatever I could.
Did you do any wrestling?
I did not do wrestling. My high school didn't have a wrestling team.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah.
So you weren't the guy that went into the wrestling room expecting there to be a ring?
No, luckily no.
It's interesting that you never did any amateur wrestling because I watch your matches and the way you move, you look like a guy who's done some amateur or at least trained in it a little bit. Is this just all your pro wrestling training?
It's all pro wrestling.
Now, any mixed martial arts training or grappling or anything like that?
Aside from the stuff I've done with Dan lately, nothing ahead of that.
Now, when you train with Dan, is it, I don't know, kind of, I mean, obviously he's done, you know, wrestling for about 100 years now. Don't tell him I said that, by the way.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you do some of that stuff, do you kind of sit there and go, man, you know, 10 years ago, if I'd have come to the Michigan sports camp here, I might have been following a different career path.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, I don't know, the stuff that he does and that he teaches, I don't know, even if I started training 10 years ago and, you know, however long ago, whether or not I chose to go into MMA or something like that, it would still be a huge benefit in the world of pro wrestling like it is for me today.
Now, you, of course, had the match where I believe it was a broken arm, and you just kept going. And
yeah.
Tell everybody that story, I think you feel, I've read some other interviews, you feel that was kind of like a turning point in the sense that, you know, everybody knows what wrestling is, but when a guy goes in there and he's obviously injured and he keeps going, there's kind of like a toughness, or a real-life toughness that's built in the guy. And do you kind of feel that was a turning point for you?
Yeah, on a Friday night, I broke it against Kevin Steen, broke my elbow. You know, went to the hospital that night, got it all situated, found out that it was broken, whatever, and that I could either wait and do surgery that night or, you know, put it off for a few days, which I chose to do because we had, I believe it was final battle. I don't know if it was final battle the next night. But we had an event in New York City, and, you know, I was just wanted to go and see what I could do and see if I could pull it off. And just the reaction of fans, even fans outside the building, you know, you could get the feel that, you know, they were respected what I was going to do. And even when, you know, they were chanting Eddie, and it was definitely a turning point in my career, especially in Ring of Honor, and I think it just opened people's eyes up to, you know, what not just myself does, but all wrestlers do when we're out there, the risk that we take. I think, you know, they respect what we're doing.
Now, did you afterwards regret not getting the elbow done, or did you manage to not do any further damage in that match?
No, I mean, luckily I didn't do any further damage because I had it all wrapped up and taped up where I couldn't move it even if I wanted to. So luckily, no further damage. And in the end, I don't regret it at all because I'm glad I got to do the match and, you know, it turned out helping me in the long run.
Now, there are a lot of fans that the first they ever saw of you was in Ring of Honor, but you'd been wrestling for 4 or 5 years before you even had your first Ring of Honor match. And talk a little bit about the early career. I mean, you worked in some of the bigger independents around the Northeast, and you look back at some of those matches, and a lot of big names, a lot of guys that went on to bigger things. Obviously, Samoa Joe and you know, guys like that. So talk a little bit about how you first got your early bookings after training.
Yeah, well, I mean, when I first... Slick Wagner Brown was one of the trainers. He was the head trainer at Kowalski's at the time when I was there. And, you know, he was really good as far as helping guys out and, you know, teaching me the ways as far as, you know, just go to as many shows as possible. And that's exactly what I did. I worked as many shows as I could. It didn't matter where they were or whatever. I would just go there and try to get my name out there and wrestle as much as I could. You know, New England Championship Wrestling and 2CW up in New York and, you know, MWF in my area. That's where I got to wrestle like AJ Styles and Joey Matthews at the time and Samoa Joe up in 2CW. I mean, wrestling those guys at the time, it was awesome because, you know, I was a fan of Ring of Honor and guys like that, and I wanted to see if I could compete and what better way to do it than get in the ring and actually try.
Now, you mentioned that Slick Wagner Brown was doing the training there. How often did you get to see Kowalski? And I presume he was getting on in years at that point. I mean, did he ever get in the ring at all?
He was at every class. He was always there. And occasionally he would get in the ring, and you knew you were in trouble if he was getting up and getting in the ring. Usually he'd just be, you know, yelling from outside, "That looks like shit," or whatever, or fake and whatever.
Sure.
And then when he got up and got in the ring, you better get ready to be in some pain.
What kind of stuff would he do when he got in the ring?
Usually, well, the first thing he would do, even before you join wrestling school, you know, I think it was the first day I walked up there, he asked me to try to flex my stomach as hard as I could, and then he put on the claw and made me writhe around in pain. He would get in the ring and show monkey flips and show some submissions and stuff like that. Anytime he got in there, it was pretty cool seeing that legend in there.
Okay, so hold on. I gotta go back to the beginning here. So yeah. He told you to flex your stomach as hard as you could, and he applied the claw?
Oh, yeah. That's how he recruited students.
How about that?
Yeah.
And then he performed a monkey flip.
Yes, he showed guys how to do it.
Wow. Now, was this the monkey flip out of the corner, or where he sort of just...
This is more of the from the tie-up monkey flip.
I see. Okay. Yeah. I see.
Where you had no choice but to go.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't really see Kowalski running towards the corner and leaping at you.
No, not at the time.
How about that? I'd never heard the claw story before. That's fascinating. Well, there you go. After having the stomach claw applied to you, you still decided the sport was for you.
Oh yeah, I think that's what got me hooked.
Wow. So would you say that a lot of guys, you always hear people go, "Oh, who should I train with? Who should I train with?" Some people will say, "Oh man, you gotta go with a legend, or you gotta go with a guy who's been all over the place." And some people will say, as long as you got a guy that's going to teach you the basics, then you just have to do a whole bunch of shows. Nothing against Slick Wagner Brown or anything, but would he fall to that camp where it's just do as many shows as you can and you'll get better?
I mean, I think that's definitely the case, but I think it was a lot of the little things as far as, you know, the respect for guys in the business and the etiquette you should have as far as going to shows and going into the locker rooms and how you should act. That was a big thing because, you know, there's so many guys in the area that, you know, just didn't have that right sense of etiquette, and they just come off as being, you know, these guys who don't belong. And Wagner and Kowalski were guys that really taught how you should act around a wrestling locker room.
Sure. Now, the early groups you wrestled for, the Maryland Championship Wrestling, Millennium Wrestling Federation, but when you got these bookings here, I mean, before you even started training, I guess, how many local indie shows did you go to? Or was it just, you know, you found the school and then you discovered all of these different groups?
I'd gone to a couple independent shows just because I would see them in the, you know, little ads in the newspaper, and that's how I found where they were. And I would just go and check them out. I was just obsessed at that point, so I just wanted to try to see it as much as I could. I didn't get to go to a lot of the same places that I've wrestled for just because I didn't really know at the time, you know, where these shows were happening or whatever. Whatever was in the newspaper, I would find and go to.
Now, when you got back into wrestling, I presume this would be the late 90s. Was it as a result of the Monday Night Wars?
I would say so, yeah. I mean, that's what hooked my younger brother, and in turn, he hooked me, so I'd have to say, yeah.
So what's your younger brother doing now?
My younger brother is training to be, he's in school to be a lawyer.
Really?
Yeah.
Now, does he ever go, "Man, I guess he probably wouldn't say I took a wrong turn because he's in school to be a lawyer," but does he ever go, "Man, I wish I were out there on that scene with you that I introduced you to"?
I think he's happy enough with being close to me where I'm doing it, where he doesn't have to be in the ring getting beat up.
So he's never said, "Hey, what about we do a gimmick where Eddie Edwards needs a lawyer"?
No, but he wants to do that in real life, so.
I see. So he's hoping you get in trouble.
Yeah, oh, yeah, of course. That's what brothers do, right?
I see. Now, thoughts on the Davey Richards feud? Obviously, you guys have had some classic matches, and started out, obviously, doing the American Wolves tag team for a couple of years there. And what kind of things did you learn from Davey besides, obviously, intensity?
Yeah, I mean, just the way he trains and the way he goes about his wrestling, it's, you know, it really taught me, it really made me. I had no choice but to step my game up being in a tag with Davey. You know, you have to elevate your game to try to even be close to being on the same level as him. So just seeing the way, you know, his intensity, like you said, and the way he would go about his training and how much he respected the world of professional wrestling, that's forced me to step my game up and, And luckily, I was able to do it somewhat and, you know, turn it into something.
Do you have a favorite match as part of the Wolves? Any match that really sticks out as you know, someday my kids, I'm going to show them this match?
I mean, I really enjoyed a lot of the matches that we had. Well, I mean, one, our debut, I guess, which was actually in England, the first match we ever tagged together, and it was against the Briscoe brothers. And that just really stands out just because it was like the, you know, it was the new era for me, and it was something really good that I'm really happy that I was involved with.
Got a bunch of questions I want to make sure we get into here from the board, and we'll talk more about Final Battle. This person here says, any memories of working with Bison Smith in Pro Wrestling Noah, who recently passed away?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, he was the, you know, head guy-ing over there and going over. He was like, he was a big brother to all the newer guys that came over. You know, he'd help you out. He'd tell you what you should do, what you shouldn't do. You know, he's a big, scary-looking dude, but you know, he's really just one of the nicest guys that I ever met, and it's a real shame, and it's a sad thing that he's gone today.
What were some of the things that he told you you should and should not do over in Japan?
You know, just as far as, you know, the respect factor is so high over there that, you know, just not to step on anybody's toes and to, you know, get out in the ring, get working out before the shows, get out there, stretch out, make sure, of course, say hi to everybody, you know, just so you have, you know, you show that you have the same respect that for those guys over there that they did as they were coming up in the wrestling business. So you have to show that you're willing to learn their ways, and he's real big on that.
You know, going back to your early days of actually getting into wrestling, you'd watched a few shows, you were a big fan. Who was the first guy that you got into the ring with, and you had that thought, oh my God, I'm about to have a match with so-and-so?
What the first actual match was that I had?
Well, I mean, not necessarily the debut match, but, you know, maybe your debut match was just with, like, a buddy of yours or just a guy that wrestled here and there. But, like, you know, maybe, you know, some people grow up and it's like, oh, my God, I'm actually going to have a match with Marty Jannetty here in Chikara. You know, was there a guy that, like, the first time you got in the ring, you just went, man, I'm actually a pro wrestler and I'm wrestling so-and-so?
I was involved in a match with Brutus the Barber Beefcake.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. It was some sort of, like, six-man or something. But at the time, I thought it was awesome. You know, I mean, there was Beefcake out. You know, how cool is that?
Well, how was Mr. Beefcake?
You know, he was cool. I recall doing a crossbody off the top. And at the time, I had some sort of belt on, and it cut his ear open. So.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, so, I mean, I don't think I made the right impression, but I remember it.
Sure. This person says, you made your debut for PWG earlier this year. How was that experience?
Oh, it's great out there. I mean, the crowd is just rabid. You know, the whole atmosphere, the building that they do out there. You know, the crowd is so close to the ring, and they're so into the matches. It's awesome. It's an awesome atmosphere.
All right, this person here says, let's see. I asked already asked about. Oh, here's a good one. You're from the Boston area. Have you ever met John Cena?
I have never met John Cena. However, I have done shows with John Cena's dad.
John Cena Sr. has been on Raw before, and he's an indie manager, and he's quite the character.
Yeah, Johnny Fabulous.
He is quite fabulous, yes.
Yeah.
Cool guy?
Real nice guy, real nice.
All right, this person says, could you give us some thoughts on the incredible match against Kotaro Suzuki that you had to know at the start of the year?
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, that was an honor for sure. You know, being the main event at Cork and Hall, it's always been one of my goals to, you know, have a title match of that magnitude. You know, unfortunately, I came out on the losing end, but I was real happy with the performance that I put in, the effort that I put in, and just the crowd response. To be able to have that match there, it was really awesome.
I'm not an old man, but I'm always interested when I interview people that are like a decade younger than me, because there is still that missing decade there where, you know, when I was growing up, I could watch WWF and I could watch some NWA when I was first starting out. And a lot of the younger wrestlers today, it's like, you know, you guys had the opportunity, you just had tapes coming in from everywhere, and DVDs, and even like you said, you were looking for wrestling schools on the internet. You know, which when I was first interested in wrestling, that, no internet, unless you were like way down there on Usenet or whatever. But when you were getting it back into wrestling, before you'd even, I mean, in your teens, before you even started going to wrestling school, I mean, were you getting tapes from Japan and that sort of thing, or was it mostly just what you saw on cable TV?
No, I was getting tapes from everywhere, whatever I could get my hands on, from Japan, you know, ECW, just anything I could see, I would watch.
So you got to see a lot of these guys that you ended up being on cards with in Japan.
Yeah, and you know, that's one of those things where it's also like, wow, is this really, am I really in Japan right now? Is Misawa really on the other side of the ring right now?
So was it kind of cool? Would you say it was kind of a bigger deal to get those matches in Japan than the matches here in the U.S.?
Just because of the magnitude of the matches and how big those shows are, I'd say, yeah.
This person here has a question about the Die Hard nickname. Did you come up with that, and was that the result of the movie franchise?
I came up with it, yeah, in wrestling school, and I think it was one guy in my class actually suggested the name, and I was like, huh, I like that.
Die Hard, there you go.
And it turned out to work for me.
Now, had you just heard the name of the movies, or did you actually watch all of the Die Hard films?
I am not a diehard fan. So I have not, I've seen, you know, the first one, I've seen some of the other ones, but I haven't seen all of them.
All righty. Let's see here. Any funny or memorable Larry Sweeney stories, who also passed away, I believe, this year. Might have been a year and a half ago, yeah.
Nothing funny or anything, but just, the personality that he had and the personality that he put out there, you know, ringside, was just, you know, it would capture you. You know, it made everybody look and pay attention to what he was doing. He was just, you know, an eccentric person, and I'm very glad to have been involved with Sweet and Sour. That was really my first step in Ring of Honor, and it was a huge time in my career.
This person says, thoughts on the first time you met Davey? And is there anybody else on the roster you think you would make an excellent team with? I guess the question was maybe like the first time you ever met Davey Richards in the locker room. What were your thoughts?
I just thought he was, you know, a good guy. He was a nice guy to me, and I really enjoyed watching his stuff that he did in the ring. And at the time, it didn't really cross my mind that, hey, I should tag with this guy. It was just something that unfolded over the next couple of years where it just seemed to work.
This person wants to know your thoughts on working for Chikara for the first time. Obviously very different from ROH and PWG, but very rabid fans, and a lot of people, huge fans of Chikara.
Yeah, I at the time, it was supposed to be a Saturday and Sunday show, but due to some early snowfall, the Saturday show got canceled, so it was just the one show, and I had a real good time. You know, I'd love to go back and wrestle some of those guys. They have a lot of great talent there, and I'd love to be back.
Have you been recognized more often since ROH went on Sinclair, or is it pretty much, I don't know, maybe you live in an area where there isn't even a Sinclair affiliate. They're at about, I think, 40% of the country, that sort of thing. But what's been your, how's it been since the show went on Sinclair?
Yeah, I mean, I don't walk around and get noticed. We actually don't have it in the area, unfortunately. But it's because, you know, my older brother lives down in Maryland, and he gets to watch the shows because, you know, that's where Sinclair's based out of, and he gets to watch, and him and his wife and my little niece and nephew, they get to watch. So, you know, it's good that some of my family gets to see what I'm doing. You know, it's not all for these broken bones and bruises.
So your brother, does he wear, by the way, a bow tie like David Otunga on Raw?
No.
Doesn't dress up like that? That's too bad. Now, the show, let's look at the card here. We'll talk about your match here in a bit. We had the Briscoes on yesterday, and they certainly had a lot to say. And,
no, that doesn't sound anything like them.
So, actually, they've got a new video up right now. For those of you listening, you can go to the front page of the website. They can explain to you exactly why they hate Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin and what happened when WWE flew them down to Florida for a tryout and what they were told when they didn't end up being hired, which actually leads to the question, have you had much contact with WWE or TNA? I know you're in a contract right now, so nothing can happen, but in the past?
A few years ago, I had, you know, gone to the TVs for WWE, but nothing really in depth. It was just one of those things, going, being an extra, and got to work out in the ring a little bit. And that's pretty much the extent of it.
This person, actually, I'm sorry, this this lineup here, we've got the TV title match, Jay Lethal, Generico, Mike Bennett, and, well, three of them. It's three-way. And thoughts on that match for your former TV title?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be great. You know, three-ways are always interesting, and to see what happens out there. But I'm going to have to say that I think Lethal's going to pull it out this time. Even though Bennett, you know, he's been chomping at the bit for a while. I don't know, I think Lethal pulls it out.
Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas versus the Briscoes for the tag team titles. Do the Briscoes walk home with the titles?
It depends if they really let their aggressions out without getting into trouble out there, with, you know, without getting self-DQ'd or something, but anything can happen. They might pull it out. I don't know.
You know, Mark has threatened to walk around Sandy Fork, Delaware, completely nude, with the exception of the tag team title around his waist, if he wins these belts.
Well, let's hope to God that he doesn't win those belts then.
Because I believe he might actually try and film that and put it on the internet.
I'm
not sure if... Might need to do a little bit of censoring, but he'd give it a shot. You, of course, are facing Davey Richards for the title. And this will be your third match. You had the TV title match. You had a world title match. This, I guess, would be the rubber match. You've got Dan Severn in your corner. And what are your thoughts on this? Are you excited for this match? Or is it kind of one of these things where you're going into a match with excitement and dread because you know it's probably going to be a long match and I'm probably going to take a beating?
I mean, I think I've come to accept that. I think Davey has as well. You know, we're going to go in there and we know that it's not going to feel nice. You know, it's going to be brutal. It's going to hurt, but I'm really excited. I'm really looking forward to it. The atmosphere in the building last time, you know, I can only hope that this time matches it. I'm really looking forward to it. We know we're going to get hurt. We're going to leave it all out there. But that just comes with the territory, and if you want that world title, that's what you have to be willing to do.
Now, as part of your motivation for this match, the fact that Davey is in Japan half the time and not even defending the title here in the U.S.?
No, I mean, that's what a world champ does. He gets to travel the globe, and he's doing it to a T, so he should be doing that. He misses a few shows, which, you know, sucks for the world title, but hey, you know, it comes with territory.
Now, I asked the Briscoes if they were Davey Richards, if they could come to the ring with an old-school UFC star to counter Dan Severn, who would that be? And I got one vote for Ken Shamrock, I believe, from Jay. And I believe Mark, he didn't remember the name, but I think he wanted to come to the ring with Keith Hackney. I don't know if you remember Keith Hackney. This is way back in the day. But Dan the Beast Severn here. If you had the choice to bring another former UFC star to corner you, who would that be?
I would say probably Shamrock. You know, those are the two guys that really brought the super fight feel and brought UFC into the forefront. I'd have to go with Shamrock.
Has Dan ever talked to you about his match with Ken Shamrock?
Just not extensively, just aside from the fact that, you know, they never got to square it away where, you know, they ended up 1-1-1. They didn't get to see who won the rubber match, so I think that's something he would always want to do, but that's pretty much the extent of how in-depth he got about it.
Well, I'm excited to say that I can guarantee that even if you break your elbow again, your match with Davey Richards is going to be better than Severn's match with Shamrock from UFC 5. I think Dan even...
Should I tell him you said that one?
Actually, you can, because I think he said publicly that was the worst fight in the history of fighting. Now, what do you have lined up in the future after tomorrow night's show? Are you strictly doing ROH at this point? I mean, I know you've done the PWG and the Chikara, but what's your schedule looking like for 2012?
So far, it's looking pretty busy. You know, I take bookings outside of Ring of Honor when we can. I mean, the schedule for Ring of Honor is really adding up, which is great. You know, we're getting the product out there, but I wrestle anywhere I can, and I'm open to traveling anywhere I can.
Now, is there anybody in particular in ROH that's maybe coming up right now? We've obviously got a lot of names on the card here. Steve Corino, I guess, isn't really coming up. He's been there for a long time. But Steen, Strong, Truth Martini, I guess Truth Martini isn't wrestling much, but you could probably still give him a beating. And all the tag teams as well. Anybody in particular that you're looking at that in 2012 you think, you know, we could probably have some pretty great matches?
I think both guys in Future Shock, you know, Adam Cole and Kyle O'Reilly. I've wrestled Kyle O'Reilly, and, you know, he put up a fight, and I haven't wrestled Adam Cole in Ring of Honor, and that's something that, you know, I'd be open to and I really like to do. You know, all the newer guys like Mike Bennett and Tommaso Ciampa, anybody that I haven't wrestled, I'd love to step in the ring and just see what, you know, these new guys are bringing to the table.
How is your body holding up after all these years and injuries?
Yeah, the usual bumps and bruises, you know, it comes with the territory, but, you know, knock on wood at this time, nothing major.
Well, before we wrap it up today, I usually give everybody a chance to plug their Twitter, Facebook, websites, that sort of thing. I don't know what kind of social media presence you have, but if you got anything out there, now's your chance.
Yeah, check out my website, e-edwards.net, and follow me on Twitter at the Eddie Edwards, please, and thank you.
The show is ROH Final Battle Richards versus Edwards 3. It is their rubber match. They've both beaten each other once. This is for the ROH Heavyweight Championship, Hammerstein Ballroom, New York City. You can check it out at gofightlive.tv. We'll have a link on the front page later on today. And Eddie, best of luck in that match and best of luck in 2012. And thanks so much for doing the show today.
Hey, thanks for having me on. I had a good time.
And of course, thanks everybody for listening. We'll talk to you tomorrow night.